Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey there. Gary Parrish, welcome back to the CBS Sports Island College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. The Allen College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, a sub above. David Cobb is here with me. He's at home in Tennessee. I'm in a hotel room in New York City. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Please go ahead and do that while you're here. All right, let's get into it. The 68-team bracket for the 2023 NCAA tournament. It was released Sunday night exclusively on CBS, America's most watched networks, the network of stars. As always, there are four regions. And as always, we are dedicating separate episodes of the Island College Basketball Podcast to all four regions. So keep an eye out for those. This episode is on the South Regional, where Alabama is the number one seed. Arizona's the 2 seed. Baylor's the 3 seed. Tennessee is the 4. David Cobb, let's start with the Crimson Tide. I've talked to Matt Norlander about this a lot. Don't think I've talked to you about it, but you were in Nashville at the SEC tournament. You got to see Alabama up close and the reaction to Alabama up close. What do you make of Brandon Miller, the star player, projected top 5 pick, one of the best players in America, never missing a second of a game, even though, and this is just a fact, he delivered a gun to a teammate around 2 a.m. earlier this season, and a teammate's friend then used that gun to shoot and kill a 23-year-old mother of a 5-year-old boy. How big of a story should this be? How big of a story will this be? Are we spending too much attention on it or not enough?
Well, it's a wild story, obviously, and it's so at odds with the version of Alabama that Nate Oates and that team are now projecting to the rest of the world, and that they even projected to the rest of the world before all this became public. And what I mean by that is all these examples that they're willing to give you of their camaraderie, their culture, their team first mentality, the way that players are willing to sacrifice their own individual roles for team success. One example, Nate Oates tells a story of Jaden Bradley coming to him before the SEC tournament and saying, "Coach, you should start Javon Quinterly in my place in this quarterfinal game against Mississippi State." That's the version of Alabama that Nate Oates wants us to see. There's another example of that. Noah Gurley, a senior with a reduced role on this year's team, who accepts some DNPs late in the season, doesn't pout, doesn't put his head down, continues to be the consummate teammate, and then has his number called and comes in and plays a huge role for them in the postseason. And that is so at odds with a team that you would think would have some serious internal issues, given how serious of an issue they're dealing with off the court, when you have a now former player indicted during that quarterfinal game in Nashville on Friday on capital murder charges, and you have two current players who haven't been suspended connected to that. You just it's a striking dichotomy to me, the idea that you could have a team that was involved in something so horrible that is, by all other accounts, this is great, high character, others first, selfless basketball team. That's kind of my takeaway on it. It's it's a confounding situation, but there's no doubt that Alabama found its gear at the SEC tournament. They were struggling to end the regular season, but man, they rifled through three NCAA tournament teams, beating all of them by double digits in Nashville. And it's a bizarre story, and there are the versions of Alabama are very conflicted, because you've got that unselfish team first mantra that they're projecting to the world, juxtaposed with one of the nastiest off-the-court scandals we've seen in the sport in quite a while.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, like, you know, in college basketball, you get 13 scholarship players, and three of Alabama's were at the scene of a shooting and killing of a 23-year-old mother earlier this season. You'll never get around that fact. Every time I talk about this or write about this, some Alabama fan somewhere misinterprets it. Like, I wrote about it this morning because I did move Alabama to number one after the Crimson Tide beat Texas A&M in the SEC tournament title game and Houston lost to Memphis. I moved Alabama to number one in the final version of the CBS Sports Top 25 and won. And I used the top of that to write about how this is going to be awkward for Alabama going forward, because as much as they want to spin press conferences talking about how great their character and chemistry is, everybody else is going to want to spin these press conferences asking about, you know, that horrific tragedy in January. And so I wrote about it, and one of the first responses was, well, I guess Gary Parrish thinks he knows more than the Tuscaloosa district attorney, because Brandon Miller still hasn't been charged with a crime. I have never once said Brandon Miller should be charged with a crime. Never once said he should be in jail. I do wonder if Brandon Miller were not a basketball player, but just a young black man who did exactly what he did on that night, I do wonder if he would be charged with a crime under different circumstances. But I have never suggested that Brandon Miller should be charged with a crime or should be in jail or anything like that. What I have said consistently is that Alabama has multiple times said that there's no reason to discipline Brandon Miller because he didn't break any rule or guideline or policy. And I just can't balance that with what we know Brandon Miller did, because what we know he did is drive around with a loaded gun in his car. What we know he did is take that gun to the scene of where an altercation was going down between one of his teammates and another person. We know that because the teammate texted Brandon Miller and more or less said, I'm in an altercation with somebody. I need you to bring me my gun. And then Brandon Miller showed up with that gun. And then that gun was used to kill a 23-year-old mother. If something in what I just said doesn't violate a team rule, like, shouldn't you have team? I would assume, I've talked to coaches about this. Isn't it a team rule? Shouldn't it be, hey, if you're out at 2 a.m. or near 2 a.m. driving around with a loaded gun in your car, that is a violation of our team rule. We're just going to have a team rule. We're not going to be driving around with loaded guns in our car. Even if it is legally allowed in the state of Alabama, we are not going to do that. I think that probably should be a team rule everywhere. And we know that that's what Brandon Miller was doing, that he was driving around nearly 2 a.m., loaded gun in his car. And when his teammate texted and said, bring me the gun. We got to handle something. He took the gun to the guy. And then that gun was pop, 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 used to spray a vehicle and kill a young woman. I don't know what the proper punishment should be for that. I have never definitively said it should have been this, that, or whatever. What I do know is that it is incomprehensible to me that at some point Alabama wouldn't say, at the very least, hold up, you were there. Hold up, you took the gun there. We need to pause your participation until we have a clearer picture of exactly what went down and exactly what role you played in it. And if that would have lasted 2 weeks and four games, or 3 weeks and six games, or 4 weeks and eight games, I don't know what's appropriate and what isn't. I could make the case that if you are connected this closely to a murder, you shouldn't be representing a men's college basketball team regardless. But I've never made that case. I just know that him never missing a second that he otherwise would have played, despite everything we know about his role in this tragedy, just feels wrong. Wrong to me and wrong to most people. And that's why this has clearly become the biggest story in college basketball, bigger than Kansas trying to win back-to-back titles, bigger than Houston trying to win a championship in Houston. Brandon Miller and Alabama are the story of college basketball, and it'll continue to be that way until they're done playing college basketball, either because they were eliminated from the NCAA tournament or because they won the whole thing.
Yeah, a couple more things. I was just going to say a couple more things that stood out to me from the SEC tournament before we move on. One, I expected there to be a more hostile reaction in the arena when Brandon Miller caught passes, was announced during the starting lineup, when he re-entered the game. It wasn't. It was Alabama fans were just boisterous in their support of him. And the other 13 SEC fan bases represented there didn't seem to care. That struck me as unusual. I didn't expect that. The other thing was Alabama boldly brought him out to the main interview podium after the quarterfinal game and continued to do so throughout the tournament. In some ways, an effort to get him reps, I think, in front of reporters before the NCAA tournament. So he's got the no comment thing down. They've kind of worked the kinks out of that a little bit. So surprised to see them so openly doing that. Also surprised there wasn't more hostility directed towards him. So just a couple of more notes there.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is like how what was the Alabama reaction to Brandon Miller and what was the other fans' reaction to Brandon Miller? I mean, I only, because I wasn't in the building, I see what I see on Twitter, and there's like two students from this school are chanting Brandon Killer, right? I guess you're going to run into that you're going to run into that in certain set of circumstances. But if I were like, you know, Alabama ain't asking my advice on this stuff, but if I were Alabama, at this point, you can't undo what's been done, but I would have already had him sit down with like Marty Smith from ESPN. Marty's got an incredible, like, calming demeanor to him. Like, he's really good and really likable. And I think you could really prep Brandon Miller as long as he's in the clear legally. Like, you don't want him to jeopardize himself legally by granting an interview. But if you felt reasonably sure that he is legally in the clear, I would have had him sit down with Marty Smith for a pretty for a pretty lengthy one-on-one interview and let him say everything on the record that he wants to say. And I don't mean this as an indictment of Marty, because I think he's terrific. I'm just saying, like, you know, maybe the SEC and Alabama and ESPN are all in like significant business deals together. Maybe Marty would allow him to tell his version of the story without really pushing back too hard and trying to get a gotcha moment or anything like that. And then after that, Brandon Miller could just point back to that interview every time it comes up in a press conference. Well, I've already addressed that with Marty Smith. I did that last week in Nashville. I just don't feel like it's time to talk about that stuff anymore. You would have something to point back to. Right now, they don't. And people aren't going to stop asking these questions. He can keep saying respectfully, that's all I'm going to say about that. But he's going to have to keep saying that because the questions aren't going to go away. And the stories are only going to get bigger. Like, you know, the Washington Post had one over the weekend. You'll see non-sports media outlets come in and focus on Alabama and Brandon Miller. And it won't be because this super freshman is leading the Crimson Tide to perhaps its first national championship, it'll be because of the incident that he was connected to back in January. Let's move on. Obviously, we don't think Alabama is going to have any trouble in the first round against either Southeast Missouri State or Texas A&M Corpus Christi. So that can't be your favorite first round matchup. But what is your favorite first round matchup in the mid in the South Regional, rather?
Yeah. So for the site, I actually was tasked with writing about the South Regional, which makes this really convenient. And I went Missouri, Utah State because of the offensive fireworks that could transpire in this game. You got a 7-10 matchup, which is inherently a good game usually. And then you've got two of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country, both Utah State and Missouri. Both make over 9 threes per game. Neither one of them is overwhelmingly invested in playing defense. And it's also the type of game where even if a team falls behind by double digits, they could still quickly erase that in a 2-minute span with some 3-pointers. You know, Steven Ashworth for Utah State is one of the best 3-point shooters in the country, really without question. And then Missouri is just a team that I really enjoyed at the SEC tournament this week. I think Dennis Gates has done an unbelievable job getting a slow-paced, low-scoring team last year under Konzo Martin turned around and playing at a super, super fast pace and scoring a lot of points now just in year one of his tenure there. Just an incredible turnaround that I know you wrote about recently in the top 25 and one. So Utah State, Missouri, my favorite matchup in the South Regional.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
I think mine is Charleston, San Diego State. It's classic 5-12 matchup. And these are two teams that have accomplished a lot this season. Charleston is your CAA champs, CAA tournament champs, San Diego State, Mountain West champs, Mountain West tournament champs. Charleston's 31-3, won their league tournament, but a 12 seed. And that is because they have zero. They've even been in the top 25 of the AP poll this season, which I was happy for Pat Kelsey, happy for the program. I couldn't have disagreed with it more. They never had a top 25 resume. They had a lot of wins, but like literally zero good ones.
See, I always pegged you as the type of guy who would like Cougars.
Maybe in a different life. Maybe in a different life. Zero quadrant one wins. Only 2 quadrant one wins. They have 0 wins over NCAA tournament teams. And the computer numbers are all bad. Bad relative to what a top 25 team is supposed to look like. 51st in the net, 73rd at KenPom, 72nd at Torvik. Are you a buyer or seller on Charleston advancing in this tournament? Or is Charleston going to finish? Well, I guess that you're either a buyer because you believe in them, or Charleston's going to finish 31-4 with 0 good wins on the season.
Gary, I still remember where I was when you and Matt were doing your Mountain West versus the ACC breakdown on the pod. I was driving somewhere in New Jersey, and I was just yelling at the radio as you guys were debating this because the Mountain West always falls flat in the NCAA tournament. And I think I have every Mountain West team in this bracket getting eliminated in the first round. And it's just a principle for me at this point. You fade the Mountain West. And that's what I'm doing here. It's as much about that as it is me being a believer in College of Charleston. And I know San Diego State likes to play lockdown defense, and they'll do their best to slow College of Charleston down. But these Cougars, they've got five players who average double figures. And while they haven't been challenged really by a difficult schedule, I don't know that San Diego State qualifies as some tremendous upgrade in the level of athleticism and the level of physicality versus what they face night in, night out in the CAA. And now, if you were playing against an ACC team or a Big 12 team here, yeah, that would frighten me a little bit more just due to the fact that they haven't seen that caliber of athlete on a regular basis. But I'm not intimidated on Charleston's behalf by San Diego State, and I actually have the Cougars going all the way to the Sweet 16.
On behalf of the Mountain West, I hope that the league doesn't go 0-for again in the NCAA tournament, because then that starts to become your rep. That like impacts the way people view you going forward. 1 year of can't win an NCAA tournament game, despite having what they have last year, 4 or 5 teams in the tournament. 1 year of that is like, it was just a bad year. You do it 2 years in a row, and that's where people like me who rank basketball teams every day during the season say, well, okay, that Mountain West team has got a nice record, but are they really any good? Because these teams, for 2 straight years, we watched them go to the NCAA tournament, and they just don't get anything done in that event. That'll really hammer home a perception that already kind of exists with the Mountain West Conference. So I hope, for the Mountain West Conference's sake, I hope that doesn't happen. And I don't think that it will. I think they're going to win games in this tournament. I've got San Diego State actually going to the Sweet 16, first beating Charleston and then Virginia in the round of 32. Arizona is the 2 seed in the South, which means UCLA got geographic preference. UCLA got to stay as the 2 in the West, and Arizona had to go be the 2 in the South. Are you okay with that? It's very, you know, and like we're splitting hairs here, but when I woke up on Sunday morning after the Pac-12 tournament was done and took a fresh look at Arizona's body of work and UCLA's body of work, and then factored in the fact that UCLA lost its second leading scorer and rebounder, Jalen Clark, for the season, I thought Arizona deserved to be higher on the seed line than UCLA. I thought Arizona should be the 2 in the West. UCLA should get shipped out, but the committee saw it differently. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, they were probably just afraid of what Mick Cronin would accuse them of.
Yes.
If UCLA were docked and moved behind Arizona in terms of that preference. But no, I mean, I look at Arizona and I see the upset proneness. I'm not sure if that's really a word, but hey, look, they lost randomly to Utah, to Washington State, to Stanford, to Arizona State. There's just some ugly losses there that also sort of like give me some pause about picking this team to go too terribly far in this NCAA tournament bracket. Tommy Lloyd's done an unbelievable job, but he's a second year coach. He's never been further than the Sweet 16, and he lost 3 NBA draft picks from last year's roster. And they've shown that they're susceptible to upsets. So I understand the frustration on the behalf of Arizona fans, because it probably feels like that Pac-12 tournament title was kind of meaningless. Now you win the season series with UCLA with that victory, and it doesn't seem to get you much. But I do think it probably moved them up from a 3 to a 2, if my interpretations of the bracketology are correct. So that's not nothing. And I'm sure they'll travel well. I doubt there's a direct flight from Tucson to Louisville. They'll probably have to stop in Denver or something, but they'll get there. They'll be fine.
So we've talked about the 1 seed Alabama, the 2 seed Arizona. The 3 seed is Baylor, which makes sense from a body of work perspective, but Baylor is just 2-4 in his past 6 games. Over the past month, Baylor is merely a borderline top 30 team, according to BartTorvik.com. You worried about the Bears?
A little bit. You see Santa Barbara almost beat Creighton in a first-round game a couple years back. That's a team that won't be intimidated by this, and Baylor's 2-4 over its last 6. So in terms of the Alabama's path through this region, I actually think that the 2, 3, and 4 in this region are not all that intimidating, and Baylor falls into that category for me. I mean, I know they've dealt with injuries, but man, they are not the same defensive team they were 2 years ago when they had Mark Vidal and Davion Mitchell playing defense. I mean, from a defensive standpoint, golly, they miss those guys. The offense is great. The backcourt is awesome. But the defense is woof.
So what is your Sweet 16 Elite Eight and the winner of the South Regional? How does your bracket unfold?
Yeah, so I've actually got, you know, Alabama, Charleston, NC State, Arizona, getting to Louisville, and then – From there, it's Alabama over Arizona. So a little chalky on my end. But after seeing this Alabama team in person at the SEC tournament in Nashville, you know, my question going into that week was, is this the team that needed overtime to beat South Carolina and then lost to Texas A&M in the regular season finale? Or is this the team that rose to number one in the AP poll for the first time in 20 years this season? And to me, they answered that question pretty resoundingly, even amid all the off-court hoopla surrounding them. So Alabama is supremely talented, incredibly long, and I do, to a certain extent, buy the narrative they want you to hear about their team, which is that on the court, they are an unselfish and type of team that likes each other. And I mean, you know, I don't doubt that they've bonded in some ways through all this stuff. And I think there is a camaraderie there. And I do think they have the intangibles, obviously, to go with the talent to make it out of this region. So Alabama, you know, you kind of got to hold your nose to do it, right? But I think they are the team in this region.
Yeah, this is where, you know, you just have to separate the basketball stuff from the other stuff. Like, I think it's shameful, frankly, the way Alabama has handled this entire situation. I still think Alabama's an awesome basketball team. And I, like you, have them coming out of this region. I got Alabama, San Diego State in the Sweet 16. I've got Creighton, Arizona in the Sweet 16. Alabama against Creighton in the Elite Eight. And Alabama advancing out of the South to take a very complicated and uncomfortable, awkward story to the Final Four in Houston. And yes, I have Alabama playing in the national championship game against Houston. If you've seen my bracket, I've got Houston winning it all, but obviously there's nothing far-fetched about Alabama winning this. It'll, you know, they have proven over and over again as the outright SEC champs and SEC tournament champs that they are legitimate national championship contenders. I agreed with the selection committee. Alabama should have been the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. And now we'll get to see if they can make it out of the South Regional. I do think their apparent path to getting there is simpler, not simple, but simpler than any other number one seeds. Like, I feel safer about Alabama getting to the Final Four than I do any of the other number one seeds, which is perhaps sensible and appropriate given that the Crimson Tide are the number one overall seed in the 2023 NCAA tournament. Shouts to Devin Downey, shouts to Chester, South Carolina, shouts to Hawk. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening to the Island College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them, and that needs to be reflected in the comments. So make sure you handle that part of your responsibility. If you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, do that while you're here, and we will talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
What's up, y'all? This is four-time NBA champ Andre Iguodala.
Yo, and this is his best friend, the Ohio State legend, Evan Marcel Turner I.
Every Wednesday, we drop a new episode on our show, Point Four.
We're talking basketball, business, and all the culture in between.
From locker room stories to some basketball analysis from those who've been in the game.
Now, it is a dude averaging 29 and 11. God, what'd it take to be an all-star?
A win. Subscribe to Point Forward the podcast so you don't miss a thing.